Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
The champions may have turned a corner in week six. The Philadelphia Eagles coming up with a big divisional win on the road at the New York Giants to get back to 500. They're now 3-3. But more than that, it was about the way they played and the number of times that defensive front seven was able to get to Eli Manning, was able to sack him four times, 13 other times the defense hit him. That doesn't even count the number of times that they put pressure on him and forced a play, forced a throw, forced the issue long before anything had really developed for the Giants. So it was a major disaster once again for the Giants offense, which does not manage the 30 points that it had last week against that Carolina Panthers team. And you remember, Odell Beckham Jr. took responsibility for galvanizing the locker room with his interview that he did that aired on Sunday with Josina Anderson. I have no idea what he thinks about the offense now. Well, I kind of do, because he was caught on camera pounding his helmet into the side of the medical tent and just shouting, screaming in frustration. If you're wondering why he left the field early at halftime, well, you're not alone. A lot of people are wondering that, but it's actually not what you think, at least according to OBJ.
I was cramping, so I was trying to go get an IV because, you know, the halftime break is really like 5-10 minutes. So if I can use a couple extra seconds, then go in there and get an IV, be able to come back out. That's really all there was.
So don't read into it. Odell did get targeted 10 times by Eli Manning, catching six of those passes. I thought there would be a flag in the end zone when he was trying to catch a ball along the right sideline of the end zone. And there was no flag, weirdly enough. Sometimes there's PI, sometimes there's holding, sometimes there's not. But it certainly wasn't the game that he had last week. He wasn't throwing a touchdown pass, and the Giants' offense was stunted. Only one turnover, but a lot of three and outs, some drives that ended with the fourth down play. So there were a bunch of field goals. It was icky. I don't know if he's going to do another sit-down interview. What I do know is that he's not taking credit for galvanizing the locker room right now. The issues aren't going to be fixed by a guy sitting down and doing an interview and calling out his team for heart or lack thereof, calling out his team for energy or lack thereof, refusing to back his quarterback, pointing to his offensive line, and then talking about how all of this is holding him back. That's not going to help. Still a major piece of conversation, though, before this game kicked off. And then as I was listening to the Westwood One coverage, they were talking about it as well. If you haven't read my weekly column, I also wrote about Odell Beckham Jr. It's pinned to the top of my Twitter page and also on Facebook. So lots of reasons to go to our social media. First of all, we've got our week six NFL poll. What's the game you're most looking forward to? I'm going to retweet right now so you can find it. If you're just checking in, A-Law Radio. We've given you one great divisional battle, another that's a clash of the Titans in the AFC, another team that right now everybody is watching because they're competitive every single week. The Cleveland Browns now have wins in two of their last three games, and they'll be taking on the Los Angeles Chargers, which incidentally was the team they beat in week 15 of 2016, which would have been the last time they won until recently. And then the Jaguars and the Cowboys. I think similar to the Eagles and the Giants, two teams in desperate need of a win. As much as the Jags may be a popular pick in the AFC, they've dropped back-to-back games now. And the Cowboys just lost in overtime to the Texans, so they got a shorter work week. And now need to answer questions about their offense yet again. So those are your four choices. As always, if you have a different game you're looking forward to, you can quote the tweet or you can reply, and we always appreciate your submissions. And then our Hall of Flame induction requires your votes as well. Man, this one is close. Every time I look at it, the pendulum has swung in a different direction. You've got Kawhi Leonard with his crazy laugh that really did take the sports world by storm. I mean, it got Kevin Hart rolling. If you haven't seen that video of Kevin Hart reacting to the Kawhi Leonard laugh, it's awesome. So Kawhi's laugh has put the nose in front now, whereas it was Peyton Manning's tribute to Drew Brees that was in the lead for a while.
What?
I know, seriously, but Kawhi is overtaking you, Peyton. You better wield that paring knife a little bit more.
That's over now.
Or you can choose the Saudi Daisy athletic director who blames girls for pretty much everything because they pretty much ruin everything. I mean, for God's sakes, it was a change in the dress code, but somehow that results in girls ruining everything.
I hope everybody has a great day.
Too late. And then finally, Enes Kanter, who has a unique reaction to any talk of playoffs.
When I think about playoffs, my nipples get hurt.
Oh, yeah, got that. Okay, so on Twitter as well, A-Law Radio, and also on our Facebook page, you get pictures. Who should be our next member of the After Hours Hall of Flame? We're inside the Quicken Loans studios. National mortgage lender Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. The trips to London are back. I'm not sure how I feel about them. It seems like they screw teams up royally, and so they usually end up being lopsided. I'm not a huge fan of them. It also requires travel that's outside the regular routine. And if you think about the Oakland Raiders, now, I get it. They have more problems than just having to travel extra miles to get to their game of destination. But if you think about the Oakland Raiders and the Seattle Seahawks, who are heading to London for the first time, my gosh, it's bad enough that these teams constantly have to crisscross the country. But now you're sending them to London? So, I don't know, maybe this will result in a kick in the pants for either the Raiders or the Seahawks, but John Gruden's staying optimistic.
I think they're excited. I can't speak for everybody. You'd have to ask them, but I think it's a great, it's a great opportunity to see the world and play football. I mean, how good does it get? They get a bye week after this, so hopefully they all look at it that way, positively.
That is the positive, is that the Raiders then have a bye week. Did you know, according to Vivid Seats, it's a website where tickets are available, there are only 19 tickets left at Wembley Stadium for this game.
I heard a skunk got loose in our tunnel.
Well, that would explain why there are still 19 tickets available. Some people got scared off by the skunk. $184, though. That's the lowest ticket. Think about that. So all of the cheaper seats are gone, of course. Those are the ones that are gobbled up first. And there are 19 tickets left, but the cheapest seat is $184. Can I just speak for myself? I would not pay $184 to go watch the Seahawks and the Raiders. I wouldn't. There are obviously close to 100,000 seats in Wembley Stadium, so you're talking about a pretty crazy atmosphere, even if they don't all know exactly what the NFL is about. I mean, whatever. Here in the United States, we don't always know what the NFL is about when it comes to rules and the calls and the play calls that are being made as well.
The guy is drunk.
There'll probably be a few of those, too, in a stadium that holds 90,000 people. So they're returning to London. First trip of the year comes week six, and it's the Seahawks against the Raiders. It's After Hours here on CBS Sports Radio. One big question mark about okay, there's a lot of question marks about the Oakland Raiders, but one of the question marks about the Raiders is about the play of Derek Carr. It's been hit or miss. He's got more interceptions than he does touchdowns. Yes, he's got 1,600 yards, but a lot of that is because the Raiders are playing from behind. Or they end up building a lead early and then they can't hold it. They're a bit schizophrenic. And so the Oakland offensive coordinator, Greg Olsen, not to be confused with the Panthers tight end, Greg Olsen, he's trying to help his quarterback get back on track.
First year in the system, the game's on his fourth coordinator now in his time in the league, and I think it's a comfort level in the system. I'll say that, and it's a matter of sometimes pressing. For us right now, certainly trying to get him to calm down and play in a more relaxed type mode so he doesn't feel like he has to press to make plays. I think that's, when you look at some of the turnovers that he's had this year, he's been pressing, trying to make a play. And, we like that part about him, that he is a competitive guy and he wants to make every play.
We're trying to get him to calm down and realize that you don't have to do it all by yourself. I mean, that's so typical of athletes who are in positions of leadership, positions with a lot of responsibility, where they feel like they've got to do something to help their team. But it ends up hurting, right? It's like a home run hitter or just any old batter in a lineup who steps to the plate into the batter's box, and instead of just going for the single that might score a run, is swinging for the fences. Or feeling like he has to make something happen by swinging at a pitch that might be out of the zone. And so here are the Oakland Raiders and Derek Carr, who put a ton of yards up every week. They do. I don't know if you looked at this or not, but the Raiders actually are averaging 420 yards per game. That's almost 100 yards more than what the Seahawks average per game. But they give up 413 yards per game. And obviously they have a record of 1-4 right now. Their one victory being against the Browns in overtime, which they scored 45 points. So it's feast or famine with the Raiders. They put a lot of yards up, but they also give up a lot of yards. They can go flying up and down the field, but then they'll come up with a nasty turnover. So you've got that game coming from London, but that's not Interpol. If it's a game you're really looking forward to, well, then you can find us on Twitter, A-Law Radio, and then also on our Facebook page. Craig says, so the Seahawks travel to London, then get a bye, then travel to Detroit. Who made that schedule, considering they have four home games in December? That is a little odd. A lot of times you got to take into account their travel, though. Sometimes teams, if they have two games on one coast or the other, the opposite coast, they'll stay in place and they'll practice on that coast for a week rather than flying back and forth. It's not so much that it's jet lag, although there might be some of that. It's just time, and your body needs to recover from an actual game. Flying back and forth across the country is not helpful. It's a waste of time, too. I'm not a big fan of the London games. I know why the NFL does it. But I feel like it puts teams at a major disadvantage. The ones who get selected to go there, especially the ones who are coming from the West Coast or from the Mountain Time Zone, to me, it puts them at a major disadvantage. But at least the two teams have the byes afterwards. That's smart on the part of the NFL, after seeing what's happened with the London games to this point. All right, you can vote in our polls. You got to do it. Got to do it. On Twitter, on Facebook, who's your choice for the After Hours Hall of Flame? Every time I think about the candidates, I laugh because they're so funny. We've right now got Kawhi and Peyton neck and neck. But it's not too late. Cast your vote. We won't reveal the winner for another hour and a half. Straight ahead, let's take a look at what we've got in the National League Championship Series. We finally have a starting pitcher for the Milwaukee Brewers who will oppose the Dodgers and Clayton Kershaw. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast. You're listening to After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Swinging a drive to left and deep. Get up! Get up! Get out of here! Gone for Orlando Arcia! And it's 5-0 Brewers. On the stretch, here comes Hader, swinging at a fly ball. Shallow right, this should do it. It is going to be caught by Lorenzo Cain. And this one is over, and they're moving on. And another celebration for the crew.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
The voice of Bob Uecker. It feels like it's been a while since we've seen the Milwaukee Brewers. They took care of the Colorado Rockies in a sweep in the National League Division Series and then waited a couple extra days to know who they'd be facing. That's the Los Angeles Dodgers, who needed four games to get past the Atlanta Braves. We finally have a pitching matchup for the opener, which takes place Friday night in Milwaukee. Bob Uecker, the play-by-play voice of the Brewers. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Our phone number is 855-212-4227. That's 855-212-4CBS. And this game preview is brought to you by Buffalo Wild Wings. $5 game day pitchers, cocktails, cheeseburgers, and brats. When football is on, you have to be a Buffalo Wild Wings. Price and participation may vary. I kind of feel like brats are perfect for game one in Milwaukee as the Brewers get the home field advantage against the Dodgers. And their starting pitcher is Gio Gonzalez, the lefty who'd been frustrated with the Washington Nationals and ended up getting traded just before the deadline to the Brewers, which means, of course, he is eligible to start for them in game one. And he did well once he joined the Brewers. In five starts, he had an ERA of 2.13. And he was the guy on the mound in that regular season finale that then put the Brewers in game 163 against the Chicago Cubs, which resulted in the NL Central title. So why Gio Gonzalez? Craig Counsell just made this decision.
We like the matchup. We like the matchup against their lineup. And, you know, we talked about, you know, it's no secret that we're going to use our pitching a little differently than the traditionalists would like. For us, the first matchup that we liked was Gio on the mound.
Now, there was some thought that it would be Julys Chacín for game one, but he will start game three instead. That one will, of course, be in Los Angeles. Gio didn't even pitch in the National League Division Series. Instead, manager Craig Counsell likes the matchups against the Dodgers lineup. Meanwhile, the Dodgers have their ace lefty Clayton Kershaw on the mound in 14 career starts against the Brewers. He's got a 2.86 ERA, including seven starts at Miller Park, in which he's got a 1.40 ERA. Now, that's all out the window in the postseason. Keep in mind, the Brewers have won 11 consecutive games, so they are hot to trot. Nerd alert! It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Clayton Kershaw has the job of trying to shut down the lineup for the Brewers. That includes Christian Yelich. Now, the Brewers batted 250 against Kershaw this season, but a lot of that was Yelich. He had a ton of success against Clayton Kershaw. He was actually 4 of 6 with a pair of home runs against Clayton in 2018.
You know, you try to prepare for 8 guys, and then obviously Gio, who can swing the bat a little bit. But, you know, I think the outfield's obviously set. Kratz looks like he's swinging the bat well, probably will catch. And then it's really just a matter of 3 infielders for 2 positions. So it's not that hard to figure out what they're going to do. And, you know, maybe you have to prepare for one more guy. But I've got a pretty good idea of what I'll see tomorrow. I don't think it's any different than any team that has a lot of right-handed batters. You know, it's very similar to the Braves that we just faced.
And so not even knowing the specific lineup, other than, of course, Christian Yelich, and he mentions Eric Kratz, who's the journeyman catcher that he thinks will be in the lineup as well. Council likes to do the bullpen thing for sure, and the Brewers have a great bullpen. It's back-ended by Josh Hader, but how about Brandon Woodruff? Remember what he did in game one of the NLDS against the Rockies? It was a bullpen start by the Brewers, but he goes three innings. And keep this in mind, too, no Milwaukee starter has worked more than five innings so far. It's definitely going to be a force that Dave Roberts has to reckon with in this National League Championship Series.
We haven't seen a pen like this. Yeah, obviously, you know, since the trade deadline and some of the guys that they've picked up, that it's as deep a bullpen as you're going to see in the big leagues. very good arms, very neutral as far as left hand versus right hand, but the quality isn't compensated at all. So I like our position players too.
Yeah, some of these matchups, some of the strategery that will go on, it always does, has a little extra edge in the National League. I'm excited. And remember, the Brewers haven't been to the NLCS since 2011. They've never won a World Series in their franchise history, whether it be American League or National League. Remember, they were in the AL before. The Dodgers haven't won since 1988. So as much as you believe their perennial powers, and yes, they get to the playoffs, they've won six straight NL West titles, they haven't won a World Series since 88. So there's still some really good storylines there. And then we've got the American League Championship Series beginning on Saturday. I heard from some of you over the last 24 hours on social media how, as much as you're excited about Chiefs and Patriots, these would obviously be New England sports fans, as much as you're excited about that Sunday night football game between two very good teams early on, you're not going to miss a pitch of Astros Red Sox, which happens to be on. It starts an hour earlier than the football game, but it happens to be on at the same time. Even if you have two TV screens, one of those games has to get more of your mental attention. So I'm excited to see how this weekend plays out. We'll get a jump on the Final Four in Major League Baseball. Hey, we've got a way you can help people affected by Hurricane Michael. Text Michael, M-I-C-H-A-E-L, to 90999 to donate $10 to American Red Cross Hurricane Michael Relief. That's Michael to 90999, and you can donate $10 to the American Red Cross and its Hurricane Michael Relief.
You are listening to the After Hours Podcast.
Second and two for New York. Line of scrimmage is the 33. Manning takes the snap, throws it over the middle, and it is picked off on the deflection. The Eagles have it running to the near side across the 20 and out of bounds. It's Grugier Hill. The Giants turn it over early. Third and goal from the three. Manning, shotgun. He's got the snap. Manning looking to his left. Manning forced to drift. He throws to the end zone, knocked around and incomplete. It hit Scott Simonson on the hands. He could not haul it in, and the Eagles defense holds with Ronald Darby.
Early on, hit a couple big plays and things, just couldn't finish it. You know, got into the red zone, couldn't get touchdowns, so that hurt us. Just got down. You know, kind of went to a hurry up in the fourth quarter, just got down too much.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
A tale of two week six performances for Eli Manning and the New York Giants offense. 0 for 3 in the red zone. That turnover on the second snap of the game that led immediately to instant red zone for the Philadelphia Eagles. And for them, for Carson Wentz, 3 touchdowns, his best game of the season so far. They really settled into a nice groove, and he had 278 yards. They were efficient. They took care of the opportunities when they had them. They were 4 of 6 in the red zone, over 100 yards rushing as a team, despite losing Jay Ajayi. Corey Clement was back, and he had 69 total yards and a score. And it definitely helps that the defense was able to get pressure on the Giants and either force them into shorter drives or keep them out of the end zone. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on CBS Sports Radio. Ian Eagle with the calls on the Westwood One radio network. So huge division victory for the Eagles. What could be the turning point to their season? I'm going to remember this. I even wrote it down in my notes. Week six, turning point for the Eagles? Question mark, because this is the best they've looked so far this season. With Carson Wentz, with the offense, despite their losses, they not only were able to protect their defensive secondary, but the defense then gave the ball right back to the offense, who was ready to go with it. And it helps when you're playing with a lead on the road. That crowd inside MetLife already subdued by a turnover that happened within the first couple of minutes. I don't know where that came from. In the first couple of minutes. And so it kind of led to some confidence, and right away you feel like you've delivered the first blow and you want to build on that. So that's a huge deal. And Carson Wentz noted that after the game. And Doug Peterson happy to talk about the success of his quarterback.
He did a nice job, you know, running the offense, going where he needed to go with football, making some good decisions at the line of scrimmage, you know, and really put a full game together. And it was really the guys around him, too, stepping up.
Definitely was. We saw Nelson Agholor make a couple of catches that looked like a higher degree of difficulty. We always see what we get there on the Eagles side from Zach Ertz. He's really reliable. Alshon Jeffrey had a couple of touchdowns as well as nearly 100 yards. Wendell Smallwood, along with Corey Clement, and Clement was back after a couple of weeks away. So it was a total team effort. I'm still hung up on the way the defense got to Manning and the fact that they were able to hit him or knock him down 25% of the Giants snaps. That doesn't even count the pressure in which they actually were close but didn't get him, or where they forced the Giants into a play or into something they didn't want to do offensively. So that's one game, one divisional battle, and we're off and running into week six. And I'm wondering, because going into this game between the Eagles and Giants, we had talked about how both these teams are desperate for a win. Who else is most desperate for a win this week on the NFL slate? It's easy to say the Cardinals because they only have one victory. They last week just got off the schneid and picked up their first win. They're on the road at the Vikings. It's also easy to say, trying to think of who, I mean, would have been easy to say the Giants. How about the Falcons? It's easy to say they're desperate for a win. But what about some of the other teams who are kind of on the verge of either, like the Eagles, turning this thing around or sinking farther back into Pretenderville? I wonder if that's a real place somewhere in the United States. It might be. There's some crazy names of towns out there. You can find me on Twitter, A-Law Radio. While you're there, vote for the game that you're most looking forward to this weekend. It's one of our most popular Twitter polls that we do, and Facebook. You're blowing it up there, too. And our Hall of Flame poll, guess what? We've had a change in the lead again. So this is a game that's going back and forth between two heavyweights, Kawhi Leonard and Peyton Manning.
Which one?
I've just told you. Kawhi Leonard and Peyton Manning.
What?
With one word, he can make me laugh. It's just so ludicrous. So you've got Kawhi Leonard and his laugh that took the entire world by storm. I've never heard anything like it in my life. And then you've got Peyton's atypical tribute to Drew Brees. Those are the two that are in front, but they're not the only contenders. You will hear them again a half hour from now on After Hours. If you want to cast your vote for the Hall of Flame, well, you want to hear these samples. You want to hear the candidates at their finest.
You've ruined that for me.
But if you've already heard them, well, go ahead and weigh in either on Twitter, again, A-Law Radio, or our show Twitter, and then also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
I'm a fun guy.
I have no doubt. CBS's Super Bowl season continues on Sunday with an awesome doubleheader. First, you've got that AFC North battle, Pittsburgh colliding with Cincinnati. And then it's the NFL's top defense that does keep it in games. The Jacksonville Jaguars will head to Dallas to take on the Cowboys. They're desperate for a win for sure. The day kicks off with the NFL Today, powered by Ram Trucks, at 12 Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific, only on CBS. 855-212-4227. Tony is in West Virginia. Welcome to After Hours CBS Sports Radio.
Good morning.
Hey.
So just wanted to give a quick prediction for the Ravens-Titans game.
Okay.
I don't know why, but I have a good feeling that it's going to be Michael Crabtree's best outing as a Raven. I think he's going to bounce back. I think Flacco is going to go to him early and often, and I have a feeling he's going to have more than one touchdown, maybe two touchdowns in the red zone. And Alex Collins, all in all, yep. I think he's going to have over 100 yards total from scrimmage, and I think the Ravens will win 27-17. Thanks for taking my call.
Oh, you're welcome. Thanks so much for calling, Tony. Definitely, I wouldn't be surprised if, as Tony said, Flacco made a point to go to Michael Crabtree. Why? Well, because that's how you can get his confidence up a little bit. Last week, I swear, there were more tweets about Michael Crabtree's drops than there were about any other Ravens wide receiver. Now, this is a difficult game. I'm telling you, the Tennessee defense, it's physical, and it takes on the personality of its new head coach, Mike Vrabel. It's a smart defense as well. And honestly, because the offense has been inconsistent, very often the defense is having to do double duty. So now the Titans and Ravens are both coming off of tough losses, and Crabtree's drops were a major theme from last week for the Ravens against the Browns. They just had to face a defense that is all about ball hawking and turning you over. And the Titans, who are trying to scrap and claw and scrape for any little ounce of momentum. It's just not been easy for the Titans. Now, the Ravens, they had been so efficient on offense. They started out 13 of 13 in the red zone. Remember that? It set a record for teams scoring touchdowns on its first 13 trips to the red zone to start a season. But they now haven't scored a touchdown since the first quarter of week 4 in Pittsburgh. Nerd alert! Justin Tucker has been their offense since then. And again, most of that is against the Cleveland Browns, but going back to that game against Pittsburgh, they did win, but they haven't scored a touchdown since the first quarter of that game. So now 7 quarters plus overtime, and they have not scored a touchdown. It's a long streak by NFL standards, even though the Ravens are above 500. And so are the Titans. They're at 3-2. It just seems like it's been so difficult for the Titans.
Marcus Mariota.
Well, yes, that's been part of the issue. He's banged up. Coach Vrabel, what do you have to do to win against Baltimore?
The consistency of down in and down out as we move forward towards the Ravens. You know, obviously I have to continue to do a great job, a better job of getting us to protect the football and attack it on defense. I think that that's, you know, I let the team down in that regard last week because, you know, those will hurt you. Those will hurt any team, especially ours.
Well, and what he's not saying is you can't afford to turn the ball over when you're a team that scuffles on offense and has had to use, obviously, multiple quarterbacks, trying to pound the ball for sure. I mean, that's what they want to do. They want to be able to run the ball. But gosh, at times, even if Marcus Mariota is hurdling guys, they shoot themselves in the foot. And I tweeted this last week as I was watching the Titans, that they're so close to being a team that I can trust. But they make these little mistakes, and they take one step forward and then two steps back. And as you hear Coach Vrabel talk about, it's consistency. Now, their defense, as I mentioned, really good, ranked in the top. Top 10 in the NFL. I think they're number 6 overall. And they do force turnovers themselves. So maybe it's about winning the turnover battle. For the Ravens, it's about freaking getting into the end zone. And about not, same thing, stunting your own progress by dropping the football or fumbling the football. At this point, you need to settle into a groove. Teams need to start to look comfortable in their own skin. It may sound weird, but they've got to look comfortable with what they're doing. They've got to try to mask the weaknesses, but play to their strengths. And really, that's what sports are. Sports are about covering up your own weaknesses, exposing the weaknesses of your opponent, relying on your strengths. 855-212-4227. Kai is in Baltimore. Welcome to After Hours CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, Amy.
Hello.
Speaking all facts, actual factual. And I'm going to tell you, I think the addition of Dean Pease, our defensive coordinator for, 8 years at the Ravens, I think that's going to play a big part. This is going to be a very tough game. And you know I'm always riding with the Ravens, but it's going to be a very tough game. Two teams. I don't think the over is going to be over 40 points scored in this game. I hope if we utilize Lamar Jackson the right way, bring him in at the goal line or something like that instead of just, you know, having these gimmick plays with Flacco just sitting out there, not even being interested in the game. I know it's going to sooner or later they're going to throw the Flacco the ball, but I just hope if we utilize Lamar Jackson at the goal line, maybe that'll help.
Well,
but,
like a Taysom Hill situation in New Orleans. Except that Drew Brees, sometimes he's off the field, but more often than not, he's out there. He's just lined up at wide receiver.
Right. I would rather Flacco just go to the sideline for that play, and it's maybe the defense. I mean, because that corner over there, he's cheating. He's cheating up. These defensive coordinators know that Flacco's not going to get the ball.
Oh, hey, Philly. I don't know, but there are QBs out there that are catching touchdown passes.
Right.
Baker Mayfield.
That's why I said by the goal line somewhere. But you're right. Michael Crabtree, you need to hold on to the ball. I think Michael Crabtree is going to have a redeemed-type game this week. Maybe have about 10 catches, a touchdown, a score, something like that. But this, I agree, Amy. This is going to be a very tough game. Tennessee defense is playing very well. The only thing I would say to this game is special teams. Our special teams was one of the best in the league. And it seems like over the last couple games, we've just probably been one of the worst in the league, getting punts blocked, kicks blocked. And, we fired our kicker, our kick returner, punt returner, Tim White. So we brought somebody else in now, Cyrus Jones from New England. So I'm looking at the score like, I know you don't do predictions, Amy, but I'm looking at the score being a very low-scoring game, maybe a 17-10 type of game.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised by that.
I'm riding with the Ravens, so.
Yeah, I got you, man.
Have a good weekend.
Enjoy your weekend, too, Kai. Thank you. I wouldn't be surprised if it was also a defense-first game. And for those of you who may not know the tie between the Ravens and the Titans with their D coordinator, Dean Pease, who Kai mentioned, used to be with Baltimore. He retired in January, but then unretired a month later to join Mike Vrabel's staff. And so now he's the D coordinator with the Titans. And they're obviously off to a really good start. I need the Baltimore Ravens to go back to establishing the run game. And I get it. Alex Collins is a little scary for some of you, but that's what division leaders have in common. They're averaging 100 yards rushing per game, and they're attempting to run the football. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence, CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with 3 rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic? And conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai. There's joy in every journey.